I have been running my GitHub Actions on my development workstations.
Ooh. Is this using some sort of GitHub desktop application?
No, it is not using a GitHub anything at all. It's using a community developed project called ACT, which I imagine is short for Action.
Oh, I wondered if it stood for something, but now you've said that, it makes sense.
So I found myself in the situation where I needed to iterate on developing some CI for that there GitHub. And irritatingly, I had put the project that I was working on in a private GitHub repository whilst I was preparing it for public readiness. And in next to no time, I had burned through my 1,500 minutes of free CI time as I had been very slowly prodding through, make a change to my GitHub workflow, push it to GitHub, click the run my action now, and burning through minutes. And I thought, well, this is rubbish. There must be a way of doing this that doesn't burn through my allocated minutes and enables me to move faster.
I can hear people shouting at their podcast players. The correct answer is you should do all your coding in the open. Or the other thing people are shouting is don't use GitHub, use GitLab or something like that, I imagine.
Okay, we'll get to the GitLab or other GitForge a bit later on. And do your coding in the open. Yes, that's fine. But whilst you're like bootstrapping a project and getting it set up so it's ready for public consumption, I often start my projects in a private repository, get all of the infrastructure for the project in good working order, and then make it public. And that's what I was doing in this case.
And squash all the commits so nobody sees all the silly flubs you make along the way, right?
Most of them, yes. I try to hide all of the ridiculous mistakes that I make and in various ways.
So how does this ACT work then?
Well, under the covers, I think ACT itself is a Go binary. I think that's what ACT is. And it is basically a simulator for like the GitHub Actions environment. What it does is it uses either Docker or Podman to use a container in order to run the Linux workflows that you're creating for GitHub Actions. So when you run ACT for the first time, it gives you, I think it's three options to say, which of these containers would you like to use? And option one is like very skinny, almost has no things in it, and is likely to fail every step of the way. Option two is medium, which is has most of the things you'd expect to find in like, you know, the GitHub official runners and should work mostly for most people most of the time. And then option three is big boy container, many, many gigabytes, has everything imaginable, but will probably fill up your like local disk. So I went for medium, which was should work most of the time. And when you choose that option, you've got three like Ubuntu versions, just like the runners in GitHub. I think it's eight currently for ACT. They support 1804, 2004 and 2204 as the runner environments. And they're well furnished and as advertised most of the time, have what you need inside it to run your GitHub workflows.
But as with any GitHub workflow, you often add stuff anyway. As one of the steps, you might add a piece of software, a compiler or some other part of your tool chain in order to facilitate the following steps. It's always a sequence of steps, right?
Yes. Although like the GitHub virtual machine runners, the official runners, are very well provisioned out of the box. And there's a bunch of stuff in there that you actually find you don't need to install. Whereas I did find I created a new like template install tools step, which can use, so ACT exposes an environment variable, $ACT, so that you know that you're running on ACT rather than on the official runner. And by introspecting that, you can then say, well, if I'm running on ACT, I know I need these additional things.
So does that mean every single one of your workflows has to have a like an if-def, like kind of, am I on GitHub or am I in a local machine using ACT? And if I am, then I probably have to add some bits.
For the workflow I was working on, I found that useful. Yes, it has an initial step, which is, am I running on ACT? In which case, provision these additional tools. And I found that quite useful, and it's not particularly invasive, and you can keep it in your workflow even when it's running on GitHub, because it's like a no-op when it's running in GitHub. And the standard environment as provided by GitHub is well documented, so you can just look at what they provide by default and then add the extra bits and pieces that you need. It's not a big overhead. It was just something that I noticed. I think I needed something obscure in one of my you don't need it for things like Python and Node and stuff like that. It's more esoteric tools. I was building some ISO images and I needed to provision those things inside the container to do that.
Presumably it uses the same workflow YAML files in your Git repository that are interpreted and run on GitHub. How do you tell it to run a workflow?
Okay, so when you're inside your project, you can just type ACT and it will evaluate all of the workflows that you have in your project and run the ones that apply. So let's suppose you've got one CI workflow, which is for release, which checks whether this was a push with a tag. It will skip that. But if it's not that, it will probably run your regular CI, run my tests and my integration tests and my coverage reports and things like that.
And does it have a way of simulating those other triggers? Because one of the things that I often spend a lot of time faffing around with on GitHub in public is trying to make sure that the triggers run when I want to. So then I'm locally fiddling about, doing a dummy new commit, adding a tag, pushing it up, see if it ran the right bits. Is there a way of saying ACT, pretend that I've just pushed a release with a tag or something?
Yes, there is. Exactly those facilities exist.
Fantastic.
So you can get it to mask like things like I'm doing a release now. What I've actually done for my ACT triggers is said, if I'm running in ACT, this is in no way ever intended to be a release. Don't ever try and mimic a release. Always do a dev build.
Mm-hmm.
And the other thing you can do with ACT is if you're working on a particular workflow. So I was working on a workflow that was building an Android application. So I could just type ACT dash J, which is this particular job, and just the name of build Android. So skip all of the evaluation of everything and just specifically run this one job, because that's the one I'm working on. That's the one I'm iterating on. I don't need you to do all of the other steps. Just do that bit for me.
And presumably it can also pull in, like you can use workflow templates like you can on GitHub, from like the library at the end of the day, just pulling stuff from GitHub repositories, isn't it?
Yes, it works just like GitHub. So if you want to use an action from a third party, that all works. Now, the caveat to that is you have to have internet access in order for it to be able to see that action from whoever publishes it and all the rest of it. But, you know, that's kind of a given, I suppose. It does have the capability to run entirely offline if your actions will resolve and run in an entirely offline way. There are some caveats. Like as I was integrating this, I found like there were things that weren't in that medium-sized container that I needed. That was easily overcome. And then I found like some of the actions just don't work, like release-based actions. Like I want to make a release and stick it in the GitHub releases. That obviously does not work. But what does work, which I was quite surprised by, is it has an option to enable sort of an emulation of the artifacts server. So when you're doing your standard dev builds and you want to collect artifacts like your build logs or maybe in this case my Android application, my APKs, I can submit those with the same actions that you use for GitHub. It interprets those. But what you do is in the configuration option, you say, enable the activation server, and this is the directory that you should deposit the artifacts in. So what I've found is I've been able to replace things like my local makefiles or CMake files that I used as local pipelines with my GitHub actions, and I just collect the artifacts from the local builds from the artifacts directory for the project that I've configured. So I just have access to everything. So it's this ubiquitous now. I just have GitHub Actions, and that is my local loop for building and testing and collecting artifacts and using those in integration tests. It's really quite brilliant.
I'd heard about ACT sometime last year because I wanted to try and do our sift and gripe GitHub Actions on my local machine to simulate them or test them. And I didn't realize that there were differences between the ACT containers and the ones that are on the GitHub runners. And I didn't realize you could detect and that you could override and make some tweaks. Now that I do know that, I'm going to revisit this and see if I can run those GitHub Actions. And if there are any things that are missing, which I'm almost certainly it's all to do with the Go toolchain that we use, I can put a stanza in there that checks that it's running in ACT. So this is super. I didn't realize just how flexible this thing was until you started playing with it.
I was surprised as well, because I'd heard like, oh, well, it's not quite the same thing because it runs in a container. And there are some right. You know, there are issues with that. I found, for example, that one of the projects I was working on, I needed to build app images and views and containers. That's a big fat mess. I did find a way of actually byte patching app images so they work inside containers. So that was fun. So I got those working inside ACT as well. But the one thing that I found particularly interesting was I was working on a whole bunch of CI for, I mentioned the Android application, but I was also building Windows applications and macOS and iOS applications. So how do I do that inside a Linux container? Well, you can't build macOS applications inside a Linux container, but ACT does have a facility whereby you can say when you encounter runs on macOS latest or whatever version of macOS your runner is configured to interpret, don't do that. Run it on my actual Mac. So it then proxies to your host machine. And this works for macOS and Windows. So by pulling out my Mac, I was then able to fast iterate on a whole bunch of build steps for building my iOS application and my macOS application, and run through that whole process locally using the Mac itself. Now, I encountered all kinds of issues with Xcode, but that's because I'd never done this before, and this was me learning how to Xcode. But, you know, that wasn't a problem with ACT itself. It was just my novice first time going through this loop. But that was fantastic, because it then meant that I could also test, you know, and build using the macOS Xcode toolchain. So I've now got some quite complex projects instrumented in such a way that all of that CI/CD runs in GitHub and works, but when I need to iterate on it, I can do it locally and not have to go through sort of this delayed loop of make a change and push it up to GitHub. And the other day I was contributing to a project that I've never been involved with before, and they had some actions to sort of guard contributions from community members. And I was able to use ACT to run their CI checks against the contribution that I'd been working on, and found that I'd made some mistakes that would have failed. So to save my public embarrassment, was able to fix those things, run the tests locally and have them pass. And once they were all passing, then push that pull request up to the project, saving the knowledge that this was going to work and it was all going to be plain sailing.
So you saved your embarrassment on that small project and saved it up for broadcasting to all our lovely listeners. Well done.
Yeah, but we're all friends here. Everyone.
Everyone can go looking through Martin's GitHub history now and find out which one it was.
Oh, no. Those commits are squashed. You'll never find them. It's all pristine and perfect. And at the outset, one of you mentioned using other Git forges. Now, the other Git forges, their runners are almost exclusively tied to containers. So one of the things you can do is use ACT, which runs in a container, to, here we go, run your GitHub actions in like GitLab or CodeForge or one of these other places. Now, I realize that some people may not want to do that, but this is now a sort of a portable CI/CD platform you can take anywhere.
I'd like to talk about Alan's Little Helpers. And these are little scripts. I've mentioned this before on the show, that I often have little scripts that I use or that I might have developed, and these could be shell scripts or Python, and I'm trying to write more Python and write less in the way of bash shell scripts. And the other thing I'm trying to do that I've talked about is put things that are finished that I quite like and that might be useful to other people online so they can use them. And I had two occasions to do that last week. Once was someone on the Ubuntu discourse who previously used Ubuntu forums was asking if it was possible to archive some of their favorite threads from the Ubuntu forums, because Ubuntu are currently migrating people from Ubuntu forums to Ubuntu discourse. And this user had some multi-page threads with conversations that they wanted to keep. They were worried that the forums were going to go away and they were going to lose their stuff. And initially I replied to them and said, oh yeah, there's this program called Monolith, which I snapped a long time ago. And you can just go snap install Monolith and then point Monolith at a URL and it will save the entire page, including all the assets, images, CSS and everything in one file that you can then open in a browser. It's quite useful for taking like a snapshot of a web page as an all-in-one encapsulated file, HTML file that you can just open in a browser later on. It's very handy.
I once wrote a PHP script that did that.
I think we've all done that.
It's a rite of passage.
Yeah, it's like writing Tetris and 2048. Writing a thing that scrapes a web page and saves it is another thing. But then I thought, that's okay, but that only gets you one page. What if you want a multi-page? Like you could run Monolith on the first page and then run Monolith on the second page. But I thought, what would be really nice is not saving this bulky thing that's got all the CSS and all the images and all the assets. What if all you want is the conversation, the text? And so I thought, well, I could probably do that. I could probably scrape the page somehow. And so I did. I wrote a bit of Python that uses Beautiful Soup, which is a popular way of
screen scraping.
Yeah, kind of screen scraping the content out of an HTML page, right? Out of a web page. And all you do is point it at a URL, which is a vBulletin forum thread. Now, I've only tested it with Ubuntu forums, but it works. And it will figure out how many pages there are in that thread and get every post across all those pages. And it leaves a little delay after each one and saves it all to a plain text file and a JSON file, so that if you just want to read it, you can use the text file. But if you want to programmatically process it in some way and put it into another website or another system, I thought I might as well spit both out, because they're both going to be tiny because they're just plain text. So it spits both out and then you could do what you like with it. And I tested this on a few threads and it works, and I iterated on it a little bit. And then once I'd done that, I thought, well, how am I going to get this to the person? I didn't really want to go through the faff of putting it in PyPy or anything like that and publish it properly or make a snap or anything like that. I just wanted to put it somewhere with the instructions on how to run it. And so I thought, well, I might as well use GitHub. So I've got it in a directory with all the Python dependencies, and I thought, I'll just create a README to explain how to use it, and then I'll put it in GitHub. So I registered a project and I called it Archive vBulletin Thread to make it nice and generic, because I thought anyone looking for vBulletin might find it. And then I thought, oh God, all right, I'll read me. And then I thought, well, I could probably ask one of those AI friends of mine if they could write one for me. And so I just pointed them at the directory that had the code in it and said, can you write me a README? Because I want to put this in GitHub. And it did. And it put examples and how to use it and all that kind of stuff. And I told it what license to use. And then I pushed it to GitHub and I put a link in the forum. And I don't know if they used it, and I don't know if anyone's used it, but I just thought I'd throw it out there because it might be useful to someone at some point.
I'm sure somebody will find it at some point.
Yes.
Did you manually test all of the installation instructions and usage examples in the README to make sure they were in fact correct?
I did actually write that myself.
Oh, okay.
The usage, yes, I did. I think I did. But I wrote some notes and then I gave it to...
Oh, I see. You didn't just give it the script to say, figure out how to install and run this.
No. I gave it a starter for 10. I'm not the kind of person who just says, write this for me and expect it to write it all for me. I gave it a lot of additional information.
Okay.
Anyway, I found it really helpful to do that. And I quite liked the process of creating a thing that was useful, might be useful for someone else, and chuck it online. And then another question came up on the discourse where someone was asking, And this was a question that I'd not considered. They were running games in DistroBox using Wine, and they were, I guess it's in a window on their machine, and they're trying to press certain key combinations inside the container or wherever it is running Wine playing their game. And their desktop, GNOME, was intercepting those key presses, like Windows key presses and stuff, and was... It wasn't going through to the game.
Yes, I've had this in the dim and distant past. Like, yeah, you press Windows key in the game, and then your full screen disappears and you go into a window switcher.
Yes, and you die in the game, and then you're frustrated and you punch your screen. Yes. So I thought, well, that's probably doable. We could probably find out what all the key presses are, save them to a file, and then null them, and then launch the game, and then restore them all afterwards. And so I wrote a little script that just backs up your most likely GNOME settings, G settings keys that are the ones that set those key presses, back them up, switch them all off, let you play the game. And then afterwards you just run the script again with a different option and it restores them all again. And I was trying to think up a name for it. And initially I was like, GNOME key saves things, and I just couldn't think of anything. And then Martin, over coffee, said, call it key shield. I was like, oh, yes. It's like key shield up or key shield on and key shield off. And yeah, that's good. Yeah, I like that. And so, key shield. And I got, again, an AI to write the README for me, because that's the boring bit that, you know, is not hard, but it's just time consuming. So I got it to write that, and it wrote the gitignore file for me, and I pushed it up to GitHub and put a link on the discourse, and maybe someone will use it, maybe they won't. I don't know.
That's no bad use of an AI assistant, actually. How many projects have you encountered where they have no README, readme, or a complete lack of useful documentation? I mean, this is filling a good gap, like in developer blind spots of, I need to actually document this thing.
Yeah. I didn't feel bad using it for a README, because it's just like busy work that I could be better off doing something else. And it wasn't wrong. It didn't wildly make anything up. It just like made a README and it's done. And so I made them MIT license. They're in my GitHub, github.com/popey. Go and have a look. One of them even has an issue against it already. Not that it's broken, just a question about the usage and, you know, do I want to improve it? I don't know if I want to continue maintaining these things. I kind of want to throw them over the wall and like other people to use them, but that's software. That's open source software, isn't it? But look out for more. I'm going to try and do this a bit more often whenever I think up something that I need to do, is chuck a little script together, throw it on GitHub.
I have been flexing my brain recently with Project Euler.
That sounds painful.
Is this a prime number thing or something?
Some of it is prime number things.
Ah.
Some of it is other things. Essentially, it's a maths and computing challenge, or set of maths and computing challenges, that give you an opportunity to exercise computational thinking and algorithm design and coding and things like that.
Who's they?
They.
The man.
The challenges. So it's the website called projecteula.net. I'm not actually sure who runs it. But basically, they post a list of challenges. There's quite a lot now, coming up for 1,000.
Are there any that are, find how many bicycles there are in this picture, or where are the road crossings? Are there any of those?
No, it's a lot more sort of abstract stuff than that. So they all take a similar form, which is that they sort of explain the concept and they give you a basic example that you could work out on pen and paper. And they say, right, now give me the 2,000,000th iteration of this. And the answer that you give is just a number. So the way the questions are structured is there's a number which you couldn't just work out in your head. You have to write a program to compute the number for you, but it doesn't matter what programming language you use or how you do that, because all you have to put in is the result,
right?
Which means you can use any language you want by any method you want, as long as you can eventually get to the result.
I've got two questions. Is this like a coding challenge? And anticipating Alan's question, do you get magic internet points for completing these answers?
That wasn't going to be my question, but I'll allow it.
So it's not a coding challenge in, like, I've done other things like this, like the Ruby game, for example, I did a few years ago, where you submitted your Ruby program, it would run it, see if it did the right thing, and then you get points for it being the fastest or being the least lines of code or whatever, because you're not actually submitting your code. It's not necessarily a programming challenge. It's just the challenge is doing as many problems as possible, and they're ranked by difficulty as well. So you get internet beans for doing the more difficult challenges kind of thing.
Is it less internet beans, more dopamine hit?
Yes, exactly. Dopamine hit, bragging rights, that kind of thing.
Right.
The other thing is, once you've submitted the correct answer for a challenge, you then get access to essentially the community notes for that challenge, where people will post their solutions or their questions about it. So you can compare your answer to other people's who might have used the same language or might not, and see, was there something that you could have done better or differently, or something else you didn't know about this concept, which informs your future challenges.
Have you looked to see what the most obscure language or platform people have used to do theirs?
Not specifically, but I've seen a few examples of esoteric languages like Bifunge and some people doing stuff in Assembler and things like that.
Wow.
There is a lot of Python, which is what I've been mainly using. I've been doing this as an opportunity to learn some, you know, more general Python skills. And in particular, it's really good for learning about Python lists and list comprehension, because a lot of it is generating sets of numbers or words and then iterating on them as efficiently as possible. So what they say is that your solution to the problem should be computable within about a minute. So if you've written a program, you can brute force them in various ways, but if you've done it right and you've written it efficiently, you should be able to do it in about a minute. And Python seems quite good at doing that using things like list comprehension.
Nice.
First of all, let me tell you about Lua tables. Well, the second question is, do you have to do these in order, or can you just pick them at random?
No, you can just jump in wherever you like. So yeah, the only thing that's held back from you if you've not completed a challenge is the notes and the sort of the tick to say you've done this one at this difficulty. But you can jump straight in on the hardest, most recent problem if you want. But I sort of started at one, and I've worked my way up to about 16, I think, so far.
Okay. And those community notes, are they ordered by upvoting, like the most interesting or answers?
I'm not actually sure. I don't have them in front of me to answer that question. I think they might just be chronologically ordered and you can sift through them. But I think there is some maybe upvoting. I'm not sure.
So why did you start doing this? Not just to learn Python or something else?
I actually found out about it on a stag do, just to give you an idea of the kind of wild stag do's that I attend.
I think that's an indictment on all of us.
But I was going to say, I thought maybe you've completed that universal resource machine or whatever it is, that human resources game that you played, and this is just the next logical progression on from that.
To be honest, it is that kind of thing. I like doing that kind of, human resource machine game. And someone mentioned this to me over a pint when I told him that I was a software developer. And I thought, that sounds interesting. And it's also something I can do, I wanted to improve my Python skills. I have a bit of learning time at work. And if I don't have anything else specific to look at, this is a nice thing to use that time for. Keep me busy, keep me happy.